oftentimes it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Life is too short to learn a list of 1,000 rando words.
From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In with your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer at the Graduate School of Education at Stanford, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who's dean of the Graduate School of Education. And due to COVID-19, we are not taping in the studio. We are taping by Zoom, and that will be the same when we introduce our guest. Our guest will also join us by Zoom today.
Well, it's good to see you, Dr. Peacemaker Pope.
I'm a peacemaker now. I like that. I'll take that.
No, I think you are. You're very good at resolving conflicts. I've never seen it when you're part of the conflict, but you're very good at resolving other people's conflicts.
Oh, well, thanks, Dan. In fact, that's kind of the theme of the show today. So,
what a coincidence.
What a coincidence that you happen to name me peacemaker. I'm actually curious how you solve conflicts. So, you know, I'm thinking of Dan Schwartz at home and there's a conflict. What do you do? How do you handle it at home?
Oh, I pretend it isn't there until it explodes.
Oh, that sounds really healthy, Dan.
Yeah, no, it's pretty dysfunctional. Next.
Okay, all right. You're in a school, you're at a school district. I think once you were the union rep, if I recall.
That's right. I was the chief negotiator. And so that's a very formalized process where two teams are sitting on either side of the table and only the chief on each side can say anything. So that went on for a while, but ultimately that got resolved through scotch. I took the superintendent out for a drink. That's how we resolved it.
Oh, I see. So this is another, so we have a sweep it under the rug strategy, pretend it isn't there. We have a get your adversary drunk. Just ply them with liquor. Okay. And I know also you lived in Alaska in a very small community. How did you solve conflicts there?
Right. So, you know, it was quite remote, quite small. So there's no sheriff, there's no lawyers, there's no court. And so when there were conflicts, the way it was handled, at least to my eyes, over 6 years there, was gossip.
What does that mean? People
would gossip. They'd be playing cards and they'd gossip about what was going on. And then you'd sort of learn that you're being gossiped about and maybe you better straighten up. And so gossip was the law and it was the way you resolve conflicts.
And you're not the type to really care what people think about you, Dan. Did that work for you?
if you're in a place where you can't leave, and there's 100 other adults who are thinking badly of you because, or gossiping about you, even I of steel spine will bend to that. So
I like that. I like that. And then, okay, at Graduate School of Education, here at the office, how do you solve conflicts, Dan?
All right. Yeah, we have lots of conversations with individuals, trying to understand and help them understand. This can become very time consuming. You know, it's a complicated organization with a lot of passions, a lot of mission driven people. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of conflicts, often sort of through misunderstandings and misinterpretations. So you try and talk to everybody, but you know, we have certain recurrent sources of conflict, and I decided we needed some structure as opposed to someone taking it on and sort of going talking to each person. So we actually brought in our hosts, our guests today, to help teach us about peacemaking circles. And so she's working with the school, and we'll see, you know, does it work in the world of Zoom? But I'd like to introduce our guest, who's very helpful to the school. This is Karen Beastman. She's the Associate Dean and Director of the Native American Cultural Center at Stanford. She works to create more partnerships within Stanford's academic community, tribes, and Native organizations and Native alumni. And she's also an expert in peacemaking. So welcome for coming, Karen.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so I'm really eager to learn. Clearly, most of my ways for solving conflict are dysfunctional. And so it'd be really helpful. So what is a peacemaking circle, just in rough strokes?
Happy to give you some highlights. And by the way, most of my experience in peacemaking, and I appreciate the reference to expertise. I consider myself to be a student of this thinking, and it's a lifelong learning journey. And most of it came through my academic role, because in addition to being the director of the Native American Cultural Center, I have long been faculty in Native American Studies here in the Center for the Study of Race and Ethnicity, also at UC Berkeley for 27 years. So I brought this work into my classroom experience, also expanded to the Stanford Design School here, where we developed a lot of curriculum. So peacemaking, in short, is an indigenous framework of conflict resolution that is values-based and place-based. And what it does is center community engagement in addressing harm. It privileges intentional listening, and its goal is not the binary of winning and losing, but to promoting understanding that can then lead to healing. Sometimes that leads to a specific resolution, but the fundamental aspect is to create an architecture and a framework for intentional listening, better understanding, and ultimately healing of whatever the harm is. It's not a quick fix. It's been in tribal communities for centuries. And actually, we're all tribal at some point. We all come from communities that had to talk to each other, right, to resolve conflicts. We didn't defer to some third-party institution that was a fact finder, and there was some sort of binary of winner and loser, and then people left disgruntled. Somebody always lost, right? And somebody was always wounded in the process. This is a whole framework that's designed to bring everybody into the process, and regardless of whether you get the desired outcome that you want, you feel seen and heard in it, and it allows you to coexist and move forward. So that's a little bit about what it comes from. And it's primarily centered, in my experience, in tribal courts, in peacemaking courts. But what I'm really excited about is the evolution of peacemaking into education. Everything from K through 12 to higher education. And that's where most of my work has been in the last 5 years. And I'm happy if you'd like to share what that looks like. But
I think if you could give us like a concrete example, Karen, of how this has worked, because I think it is different. I think people think of winning and losing, and I think you either win the argument or you lose the argument, and or you compromise, but you're agreeing to disagree, but you're not really happy. So I'm very curious to hear how this works.
Okay. Let me give you an example of a collaboration, collaboration that led to a real life experience that was transformational, I think. When the Stanford Design School developed offered a course on how to live your life at Stanford, right? I ran over and knocked on the door and said, can we sort of adapt this to the Native community? And they said, well, sorry, stand in line. There's a 2-year waiting list. So I said, never mind, we'll grow our own. And so we did. And we developed a team of folks. And fortunately, we were blessed with a very generous gift from the Emerson Foundation to develop this kind of social justice related work, right? Because I'd also see this social justice engagement. And so we started working with partners, most of them Stanford alums, lawyers and others who were doing this work in Indian country and at nonprofit organizations and at tribal organizations to train people on the basic foundations. We trained our current students. We trained folks to work in the dorms. We trained folks to work in community on this. And then when all of a sudden we were able to have the door open, the design school, the light went off, because we saw this unbelievable synergy between design thinking, which is, if you're familiar with it, somewhat of a basic footprint. And the footprint in design thinking is quite simple, in that if you're designing for anything, whether it's an electric car or a roommate conflict, because we use that as an example, by the way, you need to start with something called an empathy map, right? And that means that if you're going to design anything, you really have to do a deep dive into understanding all of your stakeholders' needs. And that has to be through conversations. That has to be through focus groups. That has to be through all kinds of ways to sort of better understand what your users need. We thought that fit with tribal peacemaking. Tribal peacemaking is values-based. What are your values? What do you care about, right? And whether it's in tribal communities or in design school classrooms, and by the way, we cross-listed all those courses with CSRE and Native Studies, it's amazing what people came up with. What are the values that they care about? Honesty, reciprocity, balance, empathy, compassion, respect, love. So if you ground conversations in that and understand what your what everyone needs, you can actually adapt a framework to the to then approach a conflict. That's where it came from. The example, and I don't know if we have time to add to this, but this is where it really made a huge difference. Do I have time to give you the example?
In 1 second, you are listening to Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We are talking with Karen Biesman about peacemaking and really thinking about empathy and working within the community to get at everyone's values to come up with a really good resolution. And Karen, you're going to just say a little bit more about that.
Okay. 5 years ago, Native students at Stanford issued a series of resolutions to call for the renaming of campus landmarks bearing the name of Father Junipero Serra, who was the architect of the architect, meaning designer and visionary, not just the practical structural architect of the California mission system. And he was sainted by the Pope not in 2015. So he has this unique legacy of being for his known for his piety and his leadership, et cetera, in popular culture. But for Native folks, he was the architect of a genocidal chapter that dispossessed and created disease and loss of life and land and that sort of thing. So Native students wanted his name removed on Stanford landmarks. For 5 years, we created lots of learning opportunities in classrooms. We did panels. We did deep dives into research. We were very intentional about the collaboration. But it wasn't until the final days, literally, of the renaming committee's efforts to do outreach to better understand the policies of renaming that they came to the Native community. And I said, okay, come to my space, come to the Native Center. We're going to facilitate a peacemaking circle. And so the renaming committee, mostly law faculty, but other distinguished campus partners were on that as well. And one of our esteemed peacemakers who've been involved in all of this, Carson Smith, who, by the way, just finished her master's in philosophy, legal philosophy at Oxford, doing her graduate work on inter-ethnic conflict resolution based on what she had done here, facilitated this. The architecture of a peacemaking circle is really important, and a peacemaker sets the tone and the structure. People sit in a circle. That's important because it creates equity of space. The person who holds a talking piece, and it can be anything from a pencil to a mandarin orange, one of the best circles I ever saw was used with a mandarin orange that got passed around pretty mushy at the end, but it worked. Have the floor. It fosters intentional listening because you have to be patient and listen one person at a time as you go around. It goes against what popular culture tells us, that the people who speak loudest and the longest and dominate conversations win. So it fosters this. And it's based on values. What do we care about in this conversation? What's the framework in which we want to understand each other? And a peacemaker keeps us grounded in that. That conversation, for the first time, those faculty told us after the fact, allowed them to hear harm. They could hear harm by current Native students who talked about how seeing this name triggered their experience, whether they're California Indian or not, with boarding schools, with historical trauma, with other kinds of things in their families that felt like it made them unwelcome. And that was also contrary to Stanford values of building inclusive communities, right? Where everyone feels welcome. On that basis, the committee recommended that we rename three landmarks. And we did that with two buildings. And most recently, last fall, the official Stanford address was renamed from Sarah Mall to Jane Stanford Way. And so here's an example of how we use that in a way to shift a policy that promoted inclusion.
You're listening to Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz, and we are talking with Karen Biesman about peacemaking and how useful it can be in terms of getting people on the same page, changing policy, and also in classrooms.
So it would be helpful, I think, to walk through kind of on a timeline. And so imagine, I don't know if this is a good scenario. Imagine I'm a teacher And there's a child in the classroom who's really disruptive, right? And it's interfering with other kids' abilities to do the work. Maybe there's another child who always engages the disruptive child. Could I use a peacemaking circle in this circumstance to try and get sort of heal and get people moving productively together?
Yes, I think you can. I am not an early childhood education expert, so I work with folks who are. The Native American Rights Fund has a peacemaking initiative, and a lot of their current clients are school districts, because schools are wanting something like this as well. In fact, a lot of the ways that peacemaking is being used, it's adopted into restorative justice trainings. And many schools are developing RJ as a way to deal with what used to be kind of student conduct or behavioral related arenas, right? Whether it's K-12 or even higher education. But let me give you an example where I thought this worked with a young person, with a middle school person, and how peacemaking fit, and see if that actually might inform your scenario. There was a middle school girl in a rural area, rural reservation area, a Native girl, who was consistently late to school. And the school had a truancy problem. And they were really frustrated that people kept coming late. And so their solution to the problem was to develop a fine, a sanctioning. If you miss three times without excuse, your parents are going to have to pay $90 or something like
that. Wow.
Well, for a low income, it was disproportionately high, as I remember. Anyway, for a low income family, this was a single mom household. It was impossible to pay that. So what happened is that there was this huge disconnect, and the young girl was still late for school. To make a long story short, a peacemaker came in and said, let's have a conversation with this family, with this principal, with these classroom teachers, with this student. Let's figure out what's going on here. To make a long story short, this young woman woke up every morning to her mother often sleeping with a different man. And the other students teased her unmercifully. And so what she did was wait till the bell rang and sneak in after the fact. Well, this policy further punished her. And this binary didn't work. So what a peacemaker did was bring people together and say, what do we need here to support folks? Can we get counseling for this mother? Can we help the school better understand how to address truancy? Because there may be lots of other reasons that they're not aware of. What are our values in this community? And how can we support students in this? And so bringing people together to better understand in a way that's not just kind of the linear policy practice that we're often bound with, because that's the way things have already been done, is a way to do that. My same colleague at the Native American Rights Fund, who teaches this, said he was surprised to hear his third grader come home and said, I had a problem in school. We need a circle. Right. So, they're hearing this already. And kids are in community. I think there's a good fit in some of these, but it has to be done by trained folks, because, there's a lot at stake with people's feelings and emotions and making sure everyone is heard.
We are talking with Karen Beisman about a way to resolve conflicts, peacemaking.
This is Schools In.
I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I'm more expert than you.
When you can't read in American society, you are really left out.
With Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We are talking with Karen Beisman, who is an expert but also a student of peacemaking. And we were, before the break, you were telling us a story about a girl who was truant to school, and was the sort of way that the school decided to resolve that was to give a fine. And instead, that did not seem fair. And there was a peacemaking circle that was established. So can you walk us through what we might have seen in that circle? What are some of the steps that you see?
I always tell folks when I talk about peacemaking that it is simple, but not easy. It's simple, but not easy. It's simple in its foundation and its goal, but it's not easy to do. So for example, one of the first requirements of it for peacemaking to work, it has to be consensual. Meaning everybody has to consent to come to the circle. If you don't have any buy-in to the process, it will fail, right? So to consent, folks need to have a little education. They need to know what it is about. And so often when we're doing this in the classroom, we bring in tribal peacemakers or we have folks read. And by the way, one of the best things out there is a peacemaking toolkit done by a School of Ed grad. Last year, he did it for us that did a real powerful take nationally what's going on. So a little bit of education first, what it is, what it isn't. And then we describe the foundation of it. The foundation is values-based and place-based. Every institution has values. Every community has values. It's important that we first articulate those values. What are our operational values? And that's not our mission statement. It's our values, right? And everyone gets to submit their values. So there's additional level of buy-in. We also need to set expectations. This is not a fix. It's not a win or lose kind of scenario. It's not necessarily even fact-finding, right? This is designed to promote understanding and healing. It's also okay to be uncomfortable, right? We ask them to speak from their experience and how they feel, because we're all really good, especially in higher education, and certainly in education generally, of articulating from our heads. We create wonderful arguments that are based on theory or practice or whatever, but how do we feel about something? When we can get folks to feel comfortable because they've bought into the idea, first of all, they've had some basic education, they're in values, and they have to trust a peacemaker, which means you gotta have someone with some training, who is respected in the community, or someone who's had some basic facilitation skills. We all know how important a facilitator is in everything we do, right? Who are gonna keep people true to the values and keep the equity of space moving around so everybody gets to talk. And sometimes when we set this up, we also say, what are the questions? Is there a certain prompt that we want everybody to respond to, a single question, so that there's structure? The structure creates a safety net of people knowing what to expect, even though they know it's going to be hard or sad or scary or that they're going to be vulnerable. But if they're grounded in their values, they feel heard. So a peacemaker will facilitate that. The talking piece goes around with the individual who is speaking. Sometimes people can be silent. You have the opportunity to pass.
So let's say there's a circle and people maybe have different values. What happens? Does the peacemaker say, well, we need to reach consensus on which values are most important, or it's sufficient for everybody just to understand everyone's values?
I think the key is to be inclusive about values from the get-go. Here are the values that we come together with. It's not a vote. It's not a, 10 people vote for honesty and 3 people vote for empathy. The operational values are in the conversation. That doesn't mean it's tied to specific viewpoints. At least I find, and again, I am a student of this, not an expert, that there's a common humanity in the values that we all seek, even though we're coming from different perspectives. Again, transparency, honesty, empathy, compassion, trust, the kinds of things that are sort of human values that we all want in something. And if there is somehow a deviation from that, a trained facilitator can bring us back to values, right? And so again, it's not a formula, it's a framework. It does require someone, like any good facilitator in any work that we do, to have the ability to create that space. And also to talk about why this is important. It's important for us to be able to understand and hear each other, even though we disagree, even though there's pain. And in our vulnerability, if we're willing to do this, and also set confidentiality, right? So that this doesn't become what goes out on social media in the following hour. Again, it's simple, but not easy. But a trained facilitator needs to be able to set that foundation.
You're listening to Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We're here with Karen Biesman, who studies peacemaking and actually teaches peacemaking and has given lots of examples of peacemaking circles. So I'm a mom. I have fighting kids who are fighting over who gets to sit in the front seat or who didn't do their chores or whatever it is. I'm not trained. Can I use something from this, Karen, to help me and my family?
As parents, and I'm actually a grandparent, it's something that we all deal with. It's best structured, in my experience, in groups, because it creates a community of understanding, right? But those groups can be small. right? So, you know, I think my colleagues who do this work can speak to that in school districts better than I can. Can you do it digitally? Yes, but it's harder, right? Because part of this is experiential, right? Mm-hmm. It involves engaging people on an experiential level. That said, we can still look at each other. We can still set up a structure of equity of time and space. We can still ground ourselves in values. We can still be facilitated by someone who can help us create a prompt or a series of questions to ask and remind us to get out of our heads and into our hearts and speak about our experiences. So yes, it's possible.
So now we've discovered our shared humanity and the values we hold. We've expressed our feelings, the sense of harm, maybe some defensiveness explaining why I did something and I didn't realize. And then is there a part where you move towards these are our action steps? Like now that we understand, does the facilitator say, well, would everybody be happy if we did this?
Yes, because the facilitator is also a skilled listener, him or her or themselves, right? And so whenever there's a closure, that doesn't necessarily mean the end of the conversation. But the facilitator could, for example, say, I'm hearing this. The facilitator is not a fact finder. This facilitator is not a judge. That's what it differs from RJ in that way, restorative justice, because it's often used in, say, what is used to be student conduct or other kinds of environments in colleges. There still has to be sort of an arbiter, right, of a process that has some kind of end action or pathway. In this, a facilitator can say, let's think about what we can do together for next steps, right? So you never leave with an open-ended, okay, we just all shared and now we're done.
I think what's so interesting about this process is so many of us, you know, who are used to Western civilizations, rules and litigations, and something ends and someone goes to jail or someone pays money, someone's right or someone's wrong, and there's some kind of ending. And it sounds like really the goal here is more airing of grievances and really feeling heard and empathy. So thank you, Karen, for being here. And thank all of you for listening to Schools In. If you missed any of this episode, you can listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope on SiriusXM Business Radio. If you missed any of it, listen on demand, online, or with the SiriusXM app.